This is the Commodity Culture Podcast, where we interview prominent investors, fund managers, analysts, and company CEOs to give you an edge when it comes to investing in the commodity space. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Commodity Culture, where our goal is to make you a better investor in the commodity space. My name is Jesse Day. Before we dive in, standard disclaimer, nothing here is investment advice. Do your own due diligence. And today's guest is a pro trader with 25 years of experience and the founder of VerifiedInvesting.com. His show Game Plan airs live on his YouTube channel weekdays at 9 a.m. Eastern Time. It's Gareth Soloway. Great to have you back on the show.
Hey, so good to be back. Thanks for having me.
Awesome to have you back. And I want to start off with oil here. As for a while now, you've been calling for lower oil prices. I believe you had a target around $50 for WTI crude. Does the geopolitical events occurring right now change anything? We're seeing quite a plethora of them, growing tension with the conflict in the Middle East, Iran now threatening to get directly involved in potentially striking Israel. We have, obviously, Ukrainian drones attacking Russian oil refineries. The list kind of goes on. So do you take any of that into account when you're looking at the price of oil? And I know you also recently posted a video on your YouTube channel breaking down your crude oil price target. So maybe you could talk about that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think the key with the downside in oil, so I had an upside target of 85. We've achieved that. We traded a little bit above it, and now I am bearish on oil. And the thought process here is that I do expect the climate in the U.S. to start to weaken economically. And again, you know, so far we've been seeing resilient consumers spending money, but there's underlying issues here. We see consumer credit card debt that's north of $1.1 trillion. We see default rates starting to jump higher. We see the U.S. debt going higher and higher. We're seeing bond auctions that the U.S. is doing, one yesterday, in fact, that really did not go very well. You know, countries are being hesitant to buy our debt. And ultimately, it's going to mean higher for longer interest rates. And we've already seen the Fed go from, you know, predicting 6 rate cuts to now actually it's down to 2 or 1 for this year. And at some point, that's going to slow the economy and send the U.S. into recession. And I think regardless of, you know, what the geopolitical places are, whether it's, you know, Ukraine drones attacking Russian oil refineries, or if it's in the, you know, the Middle East, the U.S. now produces so much oil that it's not so reliant on the Middle East or even Russia. And I think that's the key, is that, you know, generally oil will be here, maybe a little bit higher, but once that U.S. economy cracks and we see it start to decline, that's when oil will start to decline very quickly.
Well, let's take a step back and look at the overall economy. Then you posted recently on X, commercial bankruptcies spiked. Add this to U6 unemployment going up each month and full-time workers declining. What do these facts say about the state of the U.S. economy? We also saw CPI numbers obviously coming in hotter than expected recently. So give us your thoughts there too.
Yeah. So the U6, again, that's underemployment. So we've been seeing for now months and months and months that underemployment is starting to uptick a little bit more. Underemployment, for people out there that may not know, it's basically people that want a full-time job, but they're only able to find part-time job. So in the jobs numbers, the headline number, if someone finds a part-time job, it's an additional employment, right? So someone additionally got a job, but in reality, it's showing us an underlying weakness in the system. And then if you look at the full-time workers, we've actually seen a drop, a negative number on full-time, but just an overabundance of part-time labor being taken on. So whether that's people taking part-time jobs or multiple part-time jobs, these are all signals to me that are sending warning signs up. Now, it doesn't mean this second, this minute, we're going to see a decline in the economy, but it's telling us that something is on the horizon that the Fed is going to have to deal with. And with inflation kind of upticking, it makes it a lot harder to deal with.
Yeah, it seems that there's so many data points that are pointing to a recession on the horizon. Very interesting to see how things play out. You posted on Verified Investing, insiders are selling at the highest pace since the stock market high in 2021. Remember, the S&P dropped 27% in the bear market of 2022. Is this level of high insider selling a canary in the coal mine for a potential large correction in the broad market?
That's how historically the data does show us that it is the case, right? So it shows us that these insiders, whether it's Jeff Bezos, who has sold billions of dollars in stock, or Zuckerberg, hundreds of millions, even Benioff has sold a ton of stock. You know, these are the guys that have the most insight into the economy, right? I mean, think about what Jeff Bezos must see on a daily basis with the numbers coming in from Amazon, from hundreds of millions and millions of people. He's seeing their spending habits, you know, how much they're spending. Is it up or down? And then you look at Mark Zuckerberg, right? And he has all this information from keywords, from trends on Facebook and Instagram. And so I would argue that these insiders have more insights into the economy than even our government may have. And that does make me very concerned where, you know, if you're an insider and you're in a stock and you think your stock's undervalued, you're not selling hundreds of millions or billions of dollars in stock. You're probably only doing it if you think the economy could take a downturn and your stock could go down.
Interesting. I want to talk about commodities now, but you know, we don't talk about food-based commodities a lot on the show. However, cocoa has been on a complete tear recently. I believe you also posted about coffee kind of going parabolic as well. But let's hone in on cocoa specifically for a moment. Could you break that down for us and shed some light on why cocoa has been moving up so much?
Yeah. So there's, from what I know, and listen, I'm not an expert in what's going on in the ground in various countries that produce a majority of this, but I've heard that there's some sort of disease that's been attacking the chocolate trees, the cocoa trees, and it's causing, a reduction in the supply, which is then translated into a meteoric move up in the cocoa price. Ultimately, we're just off of all-time highs. But what's so remarkable about this is you just go to the beginning of this year and it was trading around $4,000. We're now over $10,000. And that's astonishing. And we have to remember that as commodities go up, and I mean, you know, even just to point this out too on the charts, like look at coffee. So coffee has started to rip higher over the last couple of weeks as well. And that means that Starbucks likely will have to pay more for coffee. They may pass it along to their consumers and Dunkin' Donuts and all these other brands. And so these are all inflationary signals that as long as they're going up like this, that's going to keep the CPI at a much higher level and continuing to climb. And so yeah, it's really remarkable to see all the commodities across the board. And you know, there's a few that aren't rallying, you know, wheat and corn and natural gas have kind of been stuck in their lower levels, but almost everything else has really taken a turn up, including gold and silver.
Yeah, I want to get to gold and silver for just a moment. What are your thoughts then presently on things like wheat and corn, the other soft commodities? Do you think that this is maybe a signal that other agricultural commodities are also potentially set up for a big move up ahead?
Yeah, you would think so, right? So for instance, I've been really eyeing this corn chart quite a bit. There's this kind of V-shaped bottom in the chart, and we've been consolidating just below the breakout level. So now, listen, it hasn't broken out yet, and there's no guarantees that it will. But if it does break out, you will get a very sharp move to the upside. And again, the chart in general, if you look at 1,000 of these charts, a good chunk of them, over 50%, will break to the upside. So this chart is very interesting to me. The wheat chart, which has been beaten down, you know, that one is kind of hovering right around this little level here. It's trying to break out. It hasn't done that either yet. But again, you know, if these things break out with everything else that's already broken out and making 52-week highs, you know, again, the consumers, they're going to bear the brunt of it, which they're already bearing from the inflation we've seen the last couple years. And I think that's even more problematic. It's going to slow the economy. It makes it harder for us to consume when we're paying much higher prices. And then ultimately increases that inflation number as well, which makes it harder for the Fed to cut rates.
Well, let's pivot to copper. I'd like to get your thoughts there, because obviously we've seen quite a rise in the copper price this year as well, performing exceptionally well. How much of that do you think is related to the energy transition and using copper for electrification? How much of that is related to just the emergence of, emerging economies and developing nations? How do you look at the macro side of things, and how do you contrast that against the fundamentals in the charts?
Yeah, so you can see on this chart of copper that we did have a breakout. You had this kind of bearish wedge, and it totally blew right through the underbelly of the resistance. So it's now in kind of an upside trend. trending move. As long as it doesn't break back below this 415 level, you would consider it a breakout that's actually likely to go higher. Now going back to the question about the macro, I think a lot of it really started when China started to do massive amounts of stimulus. So we know China's economy, they've been struggling, really a bad recession, but the Chinese government's been coming out gangbusters and starting to do stimulus. And with the US not being in a recession and everyone thinking that the US is going to have a perfect landing and the economy's not going to slow, it really means the two behemoth economies out there could accelerate together. Now, again, I'm a skeptic on the US personally, but there's no denying that you have deflation in China, which allows their government to print massive amounts of money, and it probably does start to uptick their economy. And that's where you're getting these sort of moves in copper to the upside. So I think it's more of an issue with the global perception of copper future demand than anything else.
And what are your thoughts on uranium at present? Obviously, it's been quite a strong story as well over the course of last year into the beginning of this year so far. We've seen a lot of the equities perform very well. We're now recently getting news out of Kazakhstan that their major producer, Kazatomprom, is having issues. They not only did not meet production targets for 2023, it looks like they are going to miss in 2024 and 2025. A lot of people are pointing to that as a very bullish part of the setup. How do you see things playing out for uranium?
Yeah, so I think if you have a 6 to 12 month horizon, I think uranium is probably headed higher. There's no doubt about it. Shorter term, it's a little tricky. Like I'm looking at the chart here, and it's kind of like, is it making a cup and handle pattern? Is it making a little W pattern here? You know, we are towards the higher end of the range here. We were at, you know, just going back to March of last year, so just over a year ago, we were trading around 18. We're now over 30, nearing 31. So it's one of those things where, for me as a shorter term investor, a trader, I'm not super into the chart right here. But again, if you're someone who sees out further, I actually do think that it performs unbelievably well. I think that the only way we get away from these fossil fuels, I mean, the alternate energies aren't, we're not going to get away fast enough. So the ultimate figure out or way to figure this out is to actually move towards nuclear in a much, you know, greater way. And I think that's slowly starting to happen, which bodes very, very well for uranium and uranium stocks.
Yeah, I completely agree with you there. Let's talk about gold. Today, gold could actually close at a new all-time high, obviously showing great strength so far this year after breaking out, after it was hovering around the 2050-2060 level for a while, broke out near the end of last year, got people excited, came back down, and now it seems to have more strength. This seems to have more staying power, this current rally. Obviously, the macro setup seems amazing. Gold bugs have been talking about it forever. But how do you see the current setup for gold? And I'm wondering, you know, obviously, it's very difficult for things to just keep going up in a straight line without experiencing any sort of corrections. Do you think some caution is warranted here? Or do you think the setup is such that gold could maybe rally from here to 2,500 in short order?
Yeah, so this is the tricky one, right? So again, I continue to be a longer term, very big bull on gold. I still think we're going north of 2,500 by year end. But the question is we've had such a dramatic move to the upside, which is pretty unusual for gold to have such a straight up move. Are we due for just a little bit of a pullback? And the only thing I could see here is if you look at the chart of gold and you go back to 1980, that massive spike in 1980, if you connect that to the 2011 high, we have a high which we're piercing now. And so I guess the bigger question is do we have a little bit of a check back pullback before we make that next move to the upside? And again, part of that's going to be watching the US dollar, watching rate expectations, all of these things kind of queuing into what the ultimate end game is here. But for me, if I had to kind of just play out what I think will happen, I would say a small pullback, maybe back to 21, 2200. And then the next leg up takes us pretty much vertically to that 25 and change level.
And your thoughts on the gold miners at present, they've also rallied alongside the gold price. Do you expect gold miners, at least the majors, to track the gold price? Or do you think there could be any divergence there?
Yeah. So I do expect them to even lead the gold price. And I think the key is this, is that, you know, the gold miners really suffered for the last few years. They were underperforming gold by a mile. The reason they underperformed is because inflation was so high and the gold price wasn't going up to compensate them for the additional cost that they were taking on because of inflation. So they were really saw their profit margins dropping and so on and so forth. Now we're starting to see gold play catch up where it's shooting up. As long as gold goes up faster than inflation, the miners actually should outperform here. Now, having said that, same kind of deal. If we look at the GDX, there's this amazing trend line here, which we are just up against. So short term, we're a little extended on the GDX. I think a small pullback is in order, maybe back to about 32 from 34, 33, where we are right here. But then I think, again, the next wave of buying comes in, and I think this takes it up back to the 2023 highs, which is around 36. And ultimately, if gold does go to 2,500 plus, I think the gold miners go even higher.
And silver trading above $28 as we speak at the moment. This has silver stackers very excited as they are known to be some of the longest suffering holders of a metal. There's been experts that come on various shows talking about how silver is going to $50 every year for a very long time now. How do you see the setup currently for silver? What would it take to get silver back to previous all-time highs of close to 50?
Wow, that would be, I mean, listen, I do think eventually the all-time highs will be tested on silver. But the first step is obviously to take out the $30 level, which was our 2020 high, right? So the biggest question I have is with silver is that, you know, right now it's kind of getting that momentum trade, which probably does take it to about $30. The question is, being partially that industrial metal, if the U.S. economy struggles, does that start to bring silver back in? And I think that's the one slight negative to silver, even though I think it ultimately eventually gets up to that $50 level. If we do enter recession, let's say late this year or 2025, how does that come into play with the chart itself? I think gold, for the most part, is the safety play. It's the kind of the hedge against fear. But silver, that industrial side, it does make me question the momentum in the near term. Like, what's the better play, gold or silver? For me right now, anyways, it's gold.
And are there any other commodities we haven't discussed that you think it's important to touch on or that you've personally been looking at recently that you think could present an opportunity?
Yeah, I do think keeping an eye on something like platinum here is interesting. You can see platinum's just starting to break out. If we look at the chart here on platinum, it's been in a steep downtrend. The big level that we're going to test is this area up here around 1050. But if we get through 1050, this is in breakout territory. So I think, again, as long as silver's strong, platinum and palladium probably play catch up at some point and they'll get some momentum moves to the upside. But again, the key is just looking at it and just being aware that those metals, again, are used in a lot of industrial processes versus gold being that pure play for the most part.
And talk to us about what you're seeing when it comes to the U.S. dollar at present. Obviously, on the macro side of things, there's this story out there that I think is often over-exaggerated when it comes to people talking about de-dollarization. Obviously, foreign countries' reserves of U.S. dollars and treasuries is down, but it's not as dramatic as a lot of people are making it out to be. How do you see the U.S. dollar performing up ahead? Does gold strengthening mean the U.S. dollar must be weakening? Are those things correlated, or could both assets rise together?
Yeah, and that's a great question. So the thing to remember is that the dollar is against other currencies out there, right? So you have the dollar against the yen, against the euro, against the yuan, you know, lots of these currencies. So I think overall, because central banks around the globe are printing money and have been printing money for years, that those every currency, including the dollar versus gold, are depreciating, right? So gold goes up generally in that trend. Having said that, with de-dollarization, it's something that I do think will happen, but it's going to take a long time. Like, people make it out like tomorrow the dollar is going to crash. That's not going to happen because, again, we are still the reserve currency and we are still kind of the prettiest house on a bad block, if you will. So in that thought process, it's going to keep the dollar stronger for a period of time until our debt situation gets way worse. I mean, we're talking 35 trillion in US debt. Once that approaches 50, assuming other countries, and this is the key, assuming other countries start getting their fiscal house in order, once ours looks worse than theirs, that's when that dollar starts to really decline. But until then, the dollar is here. It's king dollar still.
And speaking of countries that do not have their financial house in order, the Japanese yen continuing to weaken against the US dollar. This is very alarming. The Bank of Japan, officials from the Bank of Japan have noted that they're willing to do anything. And there's almost a tone of desperation coming from the central bankers there. What do you think is the fate of the Japanese yen? Because obviously, you know, the monetary policy there has been kind of crazy for quite a while now. Is that policy now coming home to roost and hurting the economy? And how do you see this all playing out for the yen?
Yeah, so I mean, and this is kind of one of these uncharted territories, at least in our recent modern history, where you have a central bank that had negative interest rates for decades, right, and are now starting to see inflation and for trying to figure out how to react to this after being in this period for so long. It's honestly something that I'm not sure how it's all going to resolve itself. I don't know if it's going to be through central bank involvement and trying to fix it, or if it's going to be something that the natural market just has to do. But the one thing I do know is, looking at this chart, we just had a breakout on the dollar yen, where now it has broken above the previous high from 2022. And this means that the dollar yen could actually have a big spike higher here and continue up. And the question is, how are the markets going to react? You know, so far we're seeing the stock market today holding up, but if this gets out of hand, I do think that overall the US markets may actually start to get a little worried.
And what about the Japanese market? Do you follow the Japanese markets at all? Is this weakness in the yen, do you think, going to affect the Nikkei in a negative way?
Yeah, and that's a good question, because we just saw the Nikkei, right, hit new all-time highs for the first time in a really long time, right? So again, the Nikkei has pushed up, and I got to try to bring up the right chart here. We'll see if we can do that. Oh, that's all right. We'll just look at this one. But I will say this, is that at some point, this is going to impact their stock market. And I do wonder sometimes, and if you look at Bitcoin, right? So, you know, you haven't asked me about Bitcoin, but just looking at Bitcoin from 2021, what did we see? We saw the high, and then there was a huge period in between, and then we went and made a slightly higher high, and then we collapsed back down. And part of me wonders if, for the Japanese stock market, if that's not replicating the situation. Now, granted, there's way longer time between those two periods, but we just performed the same thing with a higher high, and now it looks like we might start to roll over there. So I think it's just something that investors have to be really aware of, and you have to wonder at what point. Every country out there is just printing and running up debt. There's a maximum amount that the system can hold before things start to break. And at that point, things get very messy for everyone. We're all in the same boat.
Well, let's get your outlook on Bitcoin, since you've brought it up. You know, most viewers of this show absolutely hate Bitcoin. I'll get comments about it, I'm sure. I do not. Bitcoin was the first thing I ever invested in, so it's kind of near and dear to my heart. It was actually kind of the portal that introduced me to the concept of sound money, that led me to silver, that led me to gold. But a lot of commodities investors don't like it, don't consider it a commodity. However, it has performed exceptionally well alongside gold, both assets hitting all-time highs. What are your thoughts on the future of Bitcoin, both short-term and over the longer run as well?
So longer run, I do continue to like it. And I just think that you're getting enough interest from institutions that there's staying power here, most likely. Obviously, we never know for sure. But enough big money players are getting involved to probably keep it around. Now, having said that, it's still a risk asset. We still see it move generally with markets. You know, example would be the 2022 bear market in Bitcoin. That was the same time the stock market was dropping, right? So we've really seen that. And now Bitcoin has made new all-time highs, and we know the S&P has made new all-time highs. So the bigger concern for Bitcoin is that if the stock market gets a big corrective move, like let's say we see inflation stay high and then the economy start to roll over and the Fed can't react like everyone hopes they do by cutting massively and stimulating, then I do worry that Bitcoin sees a sharp flush. Now, how low? That's so hard to say with Bitcoin. Would it be an all-out panic back to the lows of 2022? Probably not. But again, I think investors just have to realize it's a very volatile asset, and you just have to be careful with it.
Absolutely. And a very young asset class as well, which is why I kind of don't love it when Bitcoin maxis go around telling everybody they should just be all in on Bitcoin and Bitcoin's going to take over the dollar and be the new money and all this stuff. It's like a super young asset class. It has performed very well, which is great, but definitely exercise some caution. So let's wrap with this. You're more of a short-term trader. I think a lot of people watching this show are kind of your average retail investor. What do you think are the asset classes that are maybe the best bet to preserve wealth and to protect one's wealth in the case of a recession, a crash in the broad market? Is it a matter of holding physical gold, maybe a little bit of Bitcoin, staying on the sidelines with some cash in the case of a big market correction to maybe take advantage? What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, and I think you're right about that. I think having some cash on the sidelines is always important because you never know when the next great opportunity is going to come. And also, if it's you do see a crash in the markets, you have money to put to work when things are extremely discounted. We historically have seen crashes come and then the markets bounce back. And probably you'd see no difference. It's just a matter of how low it goes first. But I think that having cash, gold, maybe some gold miners, some other players out there. I think diversification is always really important. A couple asset classes I continue to like are looking outside of the US. I think like the EWZ is very interesting to me. This is the Brazilian stock market ETF, and it's finally broken out of a downsloping wedge pattern that it's been in. And so you might see, and this is one of the other issues, is that the US markets have sucked in so much global liquidity because we've been the best place ever to invest. There's at some point there's a reversion trade here where money starts going back to China, going back to, you know, Brazil, let's say. And I do wonder if we're getting to that point where the US economy starts to not look so great maybe in the next few months, and then money starts to flow into places like China. And if we take a look at the FXI here, the FXI again is, you know, it's down so much from the highs. You know, even going back to 2007, I mean, holy cow, it's not even, you know, it would have to go up 200% just to get back to those levels versus if you look at the S&P, how much above the 2007 levels are we? So there's been this big divergence now since really the Fed started printing in 2009 from these stock markets. And I do think there's a reversion trade there, but there's obviously risks. Anytime you're investing in China, for instance, you have the Taiwan risk. So you got to just, for me, I diversify just a little bit here, a little bit there, and have some cash and gold on the sidelines. And I feel I sleep better at night, at least.
Yes, absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Gareth, for coming on and sharing all your knowledge with us. For those who want to learn more, could you tell us about verifiedinvesting.com and your live show Game Plan?
Yeah, sure. So the Game Plan every Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. It's live. You can find it on our homepage at verifiedinvesting.com. And basically, I delve into the current stuff going on that day. So whether it's economic news, charts, we're basically a data firm that looks at charts and data flowing through to kind of give the truth of what's really going on within the markets versus what the mainstream media kind of talks about. And then also, you know, for me, it's the Verified Investing website, we created it to really be an asset for the retail investor where we supply data that normally they wouldn't see, but we want to have an outlet where everything is in one place. They can come and get all the information they require. And it's really unbiased. It's just like, here's the data. You make up your own mind. We'll tell you again what it is, and it's up to you to decide.
Great. Well, I'll put a link in the description to verifiedinvesting.com for people who want to check that out. Thank you once again, Gareth. It's been a blast as always.
It's wonderful to talk to you. Thank you for having me.
Commodity Culture is a podcast that covers investing in commodities and natural resources. If you'd like to hear more, be sure to subscribe so you are always alerted of the latest episodes.